hello and welcome to this week's edition of In Accord. I hope all of you had a wonderful Feast of Tabernacles. I know that I'm not the first one to wish that on you, but I can assure you my wife and I really enjoyed the feast this year. We were able to keep the feast with both of our daughters and their families in Orange Beach and had a great feast. As you can tell, I'm recording this from my office. This is a first for me. And the reason for that is we are actually recording the Life, Hope, and Truth Presents program in the studio today. So we're taping this from my office. Today, what I want to talk about is our international members' ability to meet together on the Sabbath and holy days. But before I get to that, I want to share with you two updates. Both of them are very sobering. First is some sad news. One of our pastors in Ghana, in West Africa, Mr. Joseph Ba, his wife, Patricia, became quite ill just after the feast and died last week. It's very, very sad. We do not yet know the cause of death. And as you can imagine, in that part of the world, sometimes a person becomes sick without even knowing exactly what they contracted. He sent these comments I'd like to share with all of you to Mr. Paul Carter, our senior pastor for the area. He writes, "We did not hear good news of the sudden death of my lovely wife, Patricia, last Thursday, the 23rd of October, 2025. She fell sick for a few days and had left me in tears. Though it is painful, but the word of God made us understand that she is asleep and would wake up on the seventh trumpet of God. That makes me comfort myself and the children." Well, of course, Mr. Carter has been in touch with Mr. Ba, and it's very, very difficult. We certainly would ask your prayers on his behalf. And I would also add, some have asked about sending cards to him. You know, in the United States, a pretty easy thing to do, but when you're talking internationally, particularly in Africa, it's more challenging. So if any of you as individuals or maybe even a congregation would like to send a regular-sized card with people having assigned it to get it to Mr. Ba, a sympathy card, if you could send that to the church office no later than November the 10th, we need to receive it by then, we will put that in a shipment of our next literature later in the month of November to Ghana. So please be remembering, though, Mr. Ba, and that's spelled, by the way, B-A-A-H, Joseph Ba. Please be remembering him, his family, and the congregations he serves in your prayers. Well, the next update has to do with something that we've seen all over the news, and that is Hurricane Melissa. I think all of us know that this hurricane has now been dubbed as the most powerful tropical storm of 2025 globally. This hurricane reached Category 5 with sustained winds of 185 miles an hour. And as I record this, it's making landfall in Jamaica. And by the time you see this, it will have already gone through Jamaica. It will be well up into the Bahamas and beyond. But because of so many members living there, we wanted to certainly ask for your prayers for the protection of God's people. I was in touch with Mr. Arnold Hampton, who is the regional director for the Caribbean, and the local pastor, Mr. Paul Fisher. And of course, my contact with Mr. Fisher was before landfall, and he assured us that the members were taking all the precautions they could. But because this is said to be a catastrophic Category 5 storm, no doubt by the time you see this, we'll know more about the impact it had on the island nation of Jamaica, as well as hopefully by then we'll know more about how our members were affected. Some have also asked about what they can do financially to assist the members, because no doubt, even if God or if they are protected from any harm, we know that there's going to be quite a bit of damage to buildings and infrastructure in Jamaica. So if you'd like to donate to assist the members in Jamaica, we ask that you do so through the CAGWA International Fund. We've announced that in the past. If you contribute to the International Fund, we will use those funds to assist the brethren in Jamaica. Thankfully, the members in the church have been very generous when we've asked to do that. And we just want to remind all of you that if you'd like to contribute, please do so by earmarking your contribution for the International Fund. But most importantly, we request your continued prayers for God's protection for his people in Jamaica. Well, as I said, today what I want to do is talk about our members' ability to meet regularly for Sabbath and holy days. Now, that may seem to be something that most of us would take for granted, but internationally, it's a little bit different. I began preparing this some few weeks ago, right after the Feast of Tabernacles, and I contacted many of our international pastors, asking them about some of the challenges and some of the members who live remotely or they aren't able to get together for services, some cases where you have one family in an entire country. Well, I got so much feedback from them that there was just too much material to cover for this program. But what I decided to focus on are those individuals or those congregations that are seeking formal legal recognition in their countries. We'll cover some of these other members in remote areas in a future In Accord, which I look forward to. But I want to focus on those situations where we're seeking formal and legal recognition in particular countries. Now, be reminded that we do have members in some areas that the group is so small, we don't have to be formally recognized or registered. We also have individuals that are living in remote islands by themselves without a congregation. But again, I want to focus on those that have that are seeking legal recognition to be able to meet as congregations. Now, some of you are probably anticipating, well, certainly he's going to get some comments from Mr. Meeker, and you're correct. Towards the end of this In Accord, I have a video interview with Mr. Joel Meeker. But most of us are able to meet on the Sabbath without a problem. Most of you watching this, of course, live in the United States, although we know that members from around the world watch In Accord. But many of us meet every Sabbath and don't even think twice about it. And we enjoy those freedoms without question. But I'd like to turn to Acts chapter 2 as we begin this to comment on what took place when the early church was just forming. In Acts chapter 2, beginning in verse 41, states that then those who gladly received his word were baptized, and that day about 3,000 souls were added to them, and they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship, in the breaking of bread, and in prayers. Now, what a blessing that was for those people, and what a blessing it remains for us today in most circumstances. As I said a few moments ago, most of you hearing my voice meet together pretty much every Sabbath or on a regular basis and are able to fellowship and break bread together. But let me comment about those that live in international areas regarding the subject of registration and recognition. As I said a few moments ago, some, of course, are so small we don't have to be registered. And we have some members that live in countries where the political strife and the military strife is so great, it's very difficult for them to meet. As an example, we have a group of brethren that live in Rangoon in Myanmar, formerly known as Burma. And things are so dangerous there that Mr. Baker has not been able to visit for almost 5 years. Now, he hopes to get to visit those people in the near future, but again, that's another topic. But let me comment on five countries that we have been seeking formal recognition for in the year 2025. First, let me briefly mention the Latin American country of Colombia in South America. Colombia is the only country actually in Latin America that we are currently seeking formal recognition. In most countries, we have that. And we, of course, sought the advice of a lawyer. We're actually seeking to have the congregations in Colombia recognized under the umbrella of our large congregation in Chile. We feel that this will be an easier way to go about it, and that process has begun. We hope that that will be approved in the weeks or months ahead. Also in two countries in East Africa, in Kenya. For many years, the Kenyan government had a moratorium on new church recognition. I wasn't aware of this until recently, but they had a moratorium because of the scandals and the scams that were taking place with churches. Many were preaching the prosperity gospel, which to them was you pay us, you give us your tithes and your offerings, however paltry that may be with Kenyans, and God will bless you. And of course, the government cracked down on them and actually put a moratorium on new church recognition. Well, that moratorium was lifted recently, and we have sought recognition in Kenya. And again, it's a long process, like it is in most of these countries. First, we had to submit paperwork this year with the Society of Registrars, and that was one process. And then after that, we had to submit paperwork and approval from the National Intelligence Service, which is Kenya's versions of the CIA. So that's where the paperwork is now. We believe it's been completed, and we hope that that recognition and formal documentation of us being a recognized church in Kenya will be approved in the weeks ahead. Next, of course, is Uganda. We heard much about Uganda during the Feast of Tabernacles because of our Rwandan brethren meeting there in the southernmost part of the country. But we have a congregation up in Kitgum. I know I shared this with you earlier in the year after a visit with Mr. Waddle to Uganda. So we have a congregation of about 40 people up in the northern part of Uganda. And we began the process of seeking recognition in the month of June. And we had hoped to be registered and fully done and registered by the Feast of Tabernacles. And we haven't quite met that that goal. We submitted documents. Then, as typical is the case in many of these countries, more documents were requested. And many of those documents had to be signed and notarized by members of the administration here at the church office and even some board members of the church. But we've sent those back, and we hope for final approval in the months ahead. And then, of course, there's Zimbabwe. I know this past summer when my wife and I visited some of the southern African churches, I mentioned the circumstances in Zimbabwe. In the spring, Zimbabwe changed their laws on NGOs in the country. And an NGO means non-government organization. Now, we call them nonprofit organizations in the United States, but they changed their laws, particularly for those NGOs outside of the country of Zimbabwe. And that affected our church there. Now, translated, what that means is they're concerned about foreign churches having a political impact upon the country. They don't want any interference, which, again, is typical of many of these countries. And banks began withholding use of funds to those organizations or those churches that were getting money from outside the country. And thus, our pastor in the western part of the country, Mr. Stephen Shabalala, couldn't access the funds. He ended up getting a visit in July from two members of the what was their equivalent to the CIA. And, of course, that was quite concerning to him. I remember well the day that he had notification of them coming to visit him, that he asked myself, Mr. Tim Waddle, and Mr. Neville Smith to be praying about it. And we didn't know what the outcome would be. Well, they visited with him, and he provided information about the church. He was able to give them documentation of the use of funds, in particular, funds that the church had received from FOI to help some of the young people with scholarships. Well, thankfully, we had all of that well documented. He also shared some literature with them, in fact. As it turned out, the country had us register with a church organization, and now we are registered legally. And things could change. We recognize that, but we're very happy that that took place. And again, that we were able to kind of get over that hurdle of getting the church registered once again in Zimbabwe. And then, of course, there's Rwanda. We've heard a fair amount from Mr. Meeker about Rwanda and what they've faced for over 2 years. Now, one of the things in talking to Mr. Meeker that I found out is we have been seeking recognition in that country for over 30 years. But because of changes in government, because of changes in requirements on and off over the years, we've never been able to achieve full recognition. And the latest effort started about 5 years ago. And as has been shared with you, they've changed the rules once again to make it very onerous and very difficult for us to be able to meet there. And thus, padlocked the doors on our church building, and our members have not been able to legally meet as congregations ever since. And again, I think all of us are well aware of that. Of course, the crisis that happened during the feast, where Mr. Meeker was interrogated, and our few members that were there in southern Uganda from Rwanda were incarcerated for a day. Now, we know that all the members were able to return home safely, and for that we're grateful. However, after the feast, I talked to Mr. Meeker and asked him if he would be willing to comment in a video interview on some of the experiences, the more details of what happened to our brethren from Rwanda at the Feast of Tabernacles in Uganda.
Hello, everyone. Mr. Horchak asked me to update you briefly about the situation in Rwanda and Uganda and how things transpired and what the impact of some of that was on our brethren in that area. So, as you know, I've been speaking about this for a while now. We have been declared illegal as a church by the Rwandan government. We're not allowed to meet there. There's a padlock on our church hall. Our church brethren have not been able to meet openly and freely for coming up on 2 years now. They had no Feast of Tabernacles last year. The idea came to me that even though we're not allowed to meet there, perhaps we could go to the neighboring country of Uganda, which has a reputation for being more open, and there's more easily free practice of religion there. I consulted with Mr. Tim Waddle. He consulted with some of the members, the Uganda members in the north of the country, and they said there shouldn't be any problem at all. So we, Mr. Waddle and I, went and found a suitable location in Tungamo, which is about an hour's drive from the Rwandan border. 16 of our Rwandan brethren traveled there. We made those arrangements possible for them. They all entered the country legally. My wife and I had visas to enter the country legally. There had never been any kind of requirement previous to this that we notify anybody before having a conference for a few days. And we had planned for them to have half the feast with us. Their pastor, Mr. Mondelli, is quite ill in the hospital, in and out of the hospital, I should say. So he wasn't going to be able to be with them in order that there would be an elder there present who would be able to oversee things. We decided that we would have the first 4 days of the feast for them. And then my wife and I were going to travel on to France for the second part of the feast. So everyone arrived in Tungamo as planned. We all were legally there. In fact, the police who later arrested us told us that we entered the country legally, but they insisted that it was required that we inform the security apparatus of the country before we would hold any kind of conference. And they wanted to know what the conference was, what were we doing. It was very suspicious for us to be doing this. And so I gave them, showed them my card, my visa, my business card, offered to let them look at the material that we'd been presenting in sermons and messages and things. And that's when they informed us, oh, no, no, we must investigate. This is very serious. You may be a threat to the country. But I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. So we had a wonderful opening night service. They ate well. They were very, very happy with the quality of the food. On the first holy day, we had a service and a Bible study. Again, some fine meals, good fellowship. It was on the second day of the feast that I was informed as we were wrapping up sermon, the recorded sermon that we had. We had sermons recorded from the Feast of Tabernacles from last year in France, and our excellent media team was able to put subtitles in Kinyarwanda across the bottom of the screen so that we wouldn't have to translate phrase by phrase as we sometimes have had to do. So we were just wrapping up the service on the second day of the feast, and I was informed that there were officials waiting to see me outside. So after we finished, we said amen. I went out and talked to them and informed me that they were intelligence officials and that what we were doing was highly suspicious. We were holding this without holding this meeting without informing them, and that was a severe breach of contract, a breach of law. And after we finished with the discussion, I said, well, if we're not welcome here, we'll leave and we'll go back to Rwanda right now. And they said, oh, no, you don't understand how serious this is. That's when I began to understand that really this was all going to be about extracting some money from me, and they were going to use our church brethren as essentially hostages to ensure that I would pay them the bribe that they wanted to have. The police, again, said, you've entered legally, you've not done anything illegal by coming here, but you can't have a conference here without us being informed in advance. Now, Mr. Waddle told me they've never done that. I've held conferences like this in probably 10 countries in Africa over the course of 30 years. I've never had to inform the authorities. We were very above board with them and had nothing to hide. They began interrogating the two members who spoke English, which is the language that they speak, cross-referencing our answers. But really, it was just bringing everything to a halt, not letting us observe the feast, and finding a way to pressure us into finally paying the bribe that they wanted. So, after lunch later that day, they declared that we were all going to be taken to the police station. I'd had lunch with my wife at our hotel, which is a short distance away, and I informed her that she should stay at the hotel and that I would take care of the business over with the church brethren and the police. So Marjolaine stayed at our hotel. She was never detained by the police, wasn't arrested. I was arrested along with the 16 church members. We were detained by the police, taken down to the police station, and they were all placed in a jail cell. They kept me in a room, and I was moved from room to room and told to repeat my story a few times. And then Mr. Waddle had contacted our lawyer in the country, who contacted a local lawyer in Tungamo, who came to the police station and offered to try to help. Basically, he informed me when we were alone that they wanted a bribe. It was a rather large bribe, and that if the bribe was paid, it would all be over in a moment, and we'd all be free to go. So It was after bank hours. I had to find a place, find someone who would change money for me. We found someone who was able to do that. The money was paid through the lawyer to the crooked policeman, and we were all declared free to go. In the morning, then, my wife and I wanted to stay in the area until we were sure that our church brethren would be freed. So we waited kind of on the outskirts of town in our vehicle until we would get a phone call from the lawyer. What happened was that the policeman started calling our driver, and that indicated to me that they wanted another bite of the apple, so to speak. So we decided we would drive on down the road, put some distance between us and them, but not leave Uganda until we were sure that our brethren had been freed. So we waited at the border about an hour away, and it took until early afternoon, finally, before they were completely released. Once we knew they were on the road and heading toward the border, we crossed. We had a flight to catch that evening in Kigali, the capital of Rwanda. We were at the airport waiting for the flight to take off when we received news that everybody had crossed the border. They were on their way home. And in fact, we received news before we left that everybody had arrived back at their home safely. So I was really proud of the behavior of our church brethren from Rwanda. I know we have such expectations of fairness in the West that we can become very irate when things are not fair, especially from authorities. And we might be tempted to ask the question, why would God let this happen? We're obedient to him. We're keeping his feast. Why can't we catch a break here? And it wouldn't be unusual for questions such as that to cross our minds. Let me just share with you, though, the response of our Rwandan brethren, one who wrote to me on behalf of all of them. Their response was, "Thanks be to God in heaven who's delivered us from the hand of these policemen." So there was no anger, frustration, just thankfulness. And I thought that was quite a wonderful lesson. They're very thankful for their release, and they don't harbor any ill will toward the church or to God. They're just thankful that he delivered them from that trial. And we're going to continue looking at everything that we can do to make it possible for our church brethren in Rwanda to meet again legally. We're still knocking on all the doors and trying to do our part to make that happen. I would like to thank all of you who prayed for us, prayed for our brethren, prayed for my wife and myself. I've been through similar things in the past, so it became clear fairly early on what was going on here. On the other hand, in Africa, you can never be totally sure how things are going to turn out, and there was a chance that things could have gone worse, much more badly. There was talk of detaining us for several days while they did their in-depth investigation. In fact, that was just a way of pressuring us. Even putting our brethren in the cell was simply a way of putting pressure on me as a pastor to do what was necessary to get them out. And in fact, that's what we did. So thank you very much for your prayers. Thank you for your support. That means a lot to us, to all of us who work in these parts of the world. We really appreciate your participation and helping bear the load that your brethren bear and that those of us who serve them bear in this part of the country. So thank you very much.
As we continue to pray for God's people in Rwanda, and for that matter, God's people around the world, so that we can continue to meet and assemble freely to worship God, I'd like all of us to consider the words of the Apostle Paul in Hebrews chapter 10, not only in light of what the members in Rwanda are missing, but what all of us need to continue to appreciate about our ability to meet together. In Hebrews 10, beginning in verse 23, Paul said, "Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much more as you see the day approaching." Brethren, let us continue to pray that God would grant the freedom of assembly and our ability to be together and to encourage one another as we look forward to the future. Well, I hope this update on this aspect of the challenges that some of our members face internationally has been of value to all of you. That's about it for this week's edition of In Accord. And I hope that all of you join us next week when Mr. Clyde Kylo will give us an update on the work of the church and our media efforts to preach the gospel around the world. We wish all of you a wonderful and restful Sabbath day as well.